Thank you for downloading this episode of the Culture Chat podcast by WorkXO, where we explore the intersection of workplace culture, progressive leadership, and the future of work. Follow us on Twitter at WorkXO and on LinkedIn and Facebook at The Workplace Genome, our cloud-based culture management platform. To learn more, visit workxo.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Charlie Judy, founder and CEO of WorkXO, welcoming you to another edition of the Culture Chat podcast. It is officially Thanksgiving Eve here in the United States of America, 2017. We are all emptying our bellies in preparation for a day or two of gluttony, which means that I'm definitely going to be trying to hit the gym today. I am chiming in from Chicago, Illinois, where it's crisp and clean. And I've got a guest again who's joining us from south of the Mason-Dixon line. I have an affinity towards the south, to the south. I went to a school, post-high school down in New Orleans, and I'm always drawn to them folk. I've got one today who I think you're all probably really interested to hear from. He's been someone I've followed and been and admired and learned from, and really has helped me think about kind of the world of work and certainly my role as an HR professional over the years. And he's really one of these guys who I think started, you know, maybe I'm going a little bit too far here, and he's gonna blush here in a second, but really started a little bit of a revolution around how we kind of challenge the traditional paradigms of, let's call it loosely, people management, human resources, talent, recruiting, etc. And you'll hear in just a second how his career has reflected that. Chris Dunn, really glad to have you here today. Chris is a trench HR professional. He has lived in the trenches of the HR practice as a chief HR officer and other executive/leadership roles in the HR realm. He is an entrepreneur. He is a business leader. He now is a partner in a business called Kinetics, which is one of the foremost RPOs in the country, and we'll let him tell you a little bit more about that. And he's the founder of one of the most prolific and well-read and really creative blogs in the realm of again, people and talent and human capital, Fistful of Talent, as well as his own HR Capitalist. And man, if I kept introducing you, we'd lose the time of the blog of the podcast here. So I'm just going to turn over you to Chris and welcome you and have you just fill in some of the blanks and tell the audience a little bit more about who you are and kind of what your point of view is.
Thanks, Charlie. And hey, great to be here. How are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Looking forward to a couple days off here, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely, as we all are. Well, I think you introduced me, and I was blushing a little bit. I think, you know, for the people who are listening to this, my background is started out, as we all do, as a college basketball coach.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
That's what got us to the South from the Midwest. So started out as a college basketball coach at UAB. Figured out I was going to be poor for the rest of my life. And I didn't like the sound of that. So went back, got an MBA, did the consulting gig for IBM Global for 2 years. And then I was actually looking to move back to the Southeast because I figured out I didn't do winters well. I went through one Midwestern winter after we moved back up there, and really kind of connected with folks at the time. It was Bell South. It's now, you know, AT&T. It was, you know, it was Singular in between. And said, hey, I'm looking to relocate, you know, what do you guys have going on? But of course, this is before the days of LinkedIn. And they said, well, didn't you used to be a coach? We've got this HR manager position available. Huh. I don't know if you got any interest in that. So I interviewed, I became an HR manager. I skipped like all the transactional stuff, and the rest, as they say, is history. So did about 10 years in big Fortune 500 companies, and then downshifted to smaller organizations. And And, you know, as it would turn out, Charlie, that's where I started the blogs at one of those smaller organizations in 2007, 2008, software business. And I keep going to smaller organizations because I've become more entrepreneurial in my career. The blogs had a lot to do with that. And, you know, here we are. But it's an exciting time to be an HR/talent professional.
Absolutely. And you, thanks for filling in some of those blanks. I neglected to mention your basketball prowess. you still play a little bit and you have sons who play as well. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I do. So I coach more than I play. I've got a couple pretty high end AAU teams that we kind of vagabond around the Southeast and a little bit around the country. Coach more than I play. And based on, you know, the shape of my Achilles and things like that, as we grow into our mid to late 40s, that's probably for the best.
Well, I'm glad then, even more glad that we have you, because we know that WorkExos and the Culture Chat audience has also an affinity for basketball. So we will feature that throughout. Let's kick this off, and as we always do, we just kind of, you know, we kind of lob one out there. It's just kind of one big question, and we see where it goes. And sometimes it goes into places that we do not expect, which makes it even better. So I'm just going to tee that up,
sure.
and let you take a moment or two to kind of, you know, to plant some seeds, and then let's go from there. So. We all know, and if you don't follow Chris, please, as soon as you stop listening to this, go out there and do so. But we all know that you've been disrupting what we could describe as kind of the traditional paradigms of work, and certainly the role that HR plays in it. And in fact, I mean, I think there was a time where HR didn't question much of what had been laid out as its role and responsibility. And as a reminder to the audience, I can say that because I am an HR professional and spent 25 years doing it. But you've been vocal about it, and you know, shamelessly, frankly, in your blogs and in your writing and your speaking. How do we get more comfortable with that? How do we get organizations more comfortable? How do we get HR teams more comfortable with focusing on kind of how do we evolve away from what we already know towards what is becoming the future of work? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's a good question, Charlie. I would give it to you from the HR point of view and also from the business point of view. I think, you know, as a, you know, early career to mid-career HR professional, my track is HR manager, HR director, VP of HR for big companies, and then as a leader in smaller kind of venture-backed firms as well. I think there's probably two facets to that. I think the first thing that really, I guess, influenced me was, you know, I learned pretty early on that the best thing that someone could say to me was, you're not like other HR people that I know. And that was a very like key, like defining moment for me. And honestly, Charlie, like anytime you hear that and it's meant as a positive, regardless of your line of work, and certainly this is true for HR, you know, to hear that is like crack from a career perspective, right? So if you unfold really what people were trying to tell me, I'll give it to you from the HR point of view, and I'll give it to you from the business point of view, and then we can talk a little bit about how everybody becomes more comfortable getting there, wherever there is. But I think from an HR point of view, you know, what I learned pretty early on was I wasn't into transactions, right? So honestly, I didn't give two you know what's about paperwork. I'm low rules, so I probably didn't care a lot about process. Really what I wanted to get to was the most interesting work. And, you know, one of the reasons I kind of migrated from my HR career to Kinetics, which is an RPO recruiting firm, and I invested in that. I'm the HR leader there and the marketing leader there. One of the reasons I kind of moved that way was, you know, recruiting has always been something that I've loved within the framework of HR. That makes me different than people who are more transactional in nature. So I'm a huge believer that to really get upstream, you've got to like cram down all the transactional and policy work to the lowest percentage possible. And what I would tell you is, you know, as I look like, you know, the decade plus of the blogs and decade plus of what I've been doing kind of in the writing and the, you know, speaking thing, kind of doing the work in the trenches in between, is that I would tell you that a lot of HR people, you know, it's easy to say you're going to like push transactions down to the lowest percentage possible, but it makes a lot of HR professionals at all levels feel pretty naked. Because when you don't have kind of that mowing the grass of transactions and process and policy to deal with, you're left with a lot of open time and you got to figure out how you're going to be impactful with that time. So I think for a lot of us, it's easier to do the transactions, the process. It's easier to be busy with that because the answer is, you know, you're going to feel kind of alone when you say, okay, so I got that. I got all that down from 50% to 15%. Now what? And then on the business side, and I'll say this and I'll throw it back to you and you can redirect me any way you want. I think when people said you're not like other HR people I know, and I know a lot of you who are listening to this podcast have heard the same thing. And if so, congratulations. I almost feel like it's a compliment. I think that really comes down to the ability to say yes. I think too many times HR is seen as the police, and we all have a little cop in us. We have to from an HR perspective. But when people compliment you and they say you're not like other HR people that I've known, they're usually saying you try and find a way to get to yes for me. And it may be yes with conditions, but kind of being on the front lines of the business as a partner at any level, HR manager, HR director, VP of HR, your ability to say yes first, and then say, here's what I need from you in order for the answer to be yes, let's work together, let's get this done, rather than your default being no or probably not, is probably the key to that whole mindset and mentality. And I'll throw it back to you and you can redirect me a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like the way that you've teed it up. I think there are a couple of things to talk about. I've always, just to kind of capstone the point you just made, I've always said that it really, And feel free to use this when next time, you know, one of your business leaders comes to you for an answer. I mean, you can say it's not HR's job to tell you what you can and can't do.
Absolutely.
It's HR's job to tell you what might happen or what the risks are of doing or not doing. But that helps open the conversation quite a bit. So anyway, that's just kind of a point. This transactional thing is important. I think what happens and what I'd love to explore a little bit more is that when the realities or the, you know, the kind of the pragmatics of the workplace come into play. So first of all, when Chris says, you know, we got to reduce the transactional side of the house in the realm of HR, that doesn't mean that that stuff goes away.
Right.
It still needs to get done, right? It's just a matter of by whom does it get done? And in Chris's case, we now have organizations out there that can take a lot of that stuff off of your plate, so that you can focus inward on the stuff that may add a little bit more value. So that's one aspect. We all know that it's great to be getting that stuff cleared from our desks, but it still needs to get done by somebody. The other piece is that I wonder how much you've experienced, you know, this kind of be careful what you ask for, right? Like, so I know that there are business leaders who say, yeah, we want somebody like Chris Dunn, who's a different HR guy, because we want him to shake shit up, or we want him to really push the boundaries of how we, you know, develop culture, how we respond to our people, how we create experiences, how we even do simple things like communicate. And yet when we start to introduce some of those things to the workplace, ooh, that makes me a little bit nervous. Or, ooh, I don't know if we're ready for that yet. Or, oh, that's a risk. I'm not sure we want to take it. Talk to me a little bit about that. Have you experienced that? And to me, frankly, I'll just put it out there, I think that's maybe one of the biggest obstacles to HR taking that step, right? They want to do some of these things, but they are met again and again and again with resistance.
Yeah, and I think it's even on the side of the company, and you kind of led with this, thinks that they want that type of HR person. They want a Charlie Judy, they want a Don Burke, they want a Chris Dunn, whatever. They want your name if you're listening to this podcast. One of the problems is they think they want that, but the culture may not be able to accommodate that. And I'll give you a quick explanation. Probably when I go out and speak, I've got a keynote that's really based on a lot of like search work we've done at Kinetics on the HR side of the house called the 9 Faces of HR. And it's a fun keynote. And basically what it says is I make the audacious claim, Charlie, that I can split the entire world of HR at all career levels up into a 9-box grid. And what I do is career level is like the thing going vertically on that 9-box grid. And then the ability to manage change and drive change and to influence others and to do a lot of things you typically associate with high-end HR is the horizontal axis. And basically, the further to the right you move in that 9-box grid, the more somebody is what a lot of people would consider to be a shit stirrer within the world of HR. They're trying to drive a lot of change. They're trying to think differently. They're trying to introduce like new things into the workplace. And a lot of people, even on the company side, think they want, you know, somebody to the far right of that grid. When we do search work for HR, they think they want that. But then it all always comes back to, from an onboarding of a search perspective, trying to figure out what they can actually accommodate. Because if you think about that 9-box grid, all the way to the left is profiles that are named the cop and the judge, right? Which is like, you know, low willingness or ability to drive change, higher on the policy and procedure side. And then to the far right is like just, you know, we've got, you know, profiles called the assassin. Right? Which is somebody right. coming in there like guns a-blazing, and there's a disconnect there. So it's like you do have to be careful what you ask for. And you also have to be careful like how you implement those things as an HR leader or even an HR manager with a client group. You know, you've got to figure out the right pace of it.
Yeah.
Because most organizations can't move as fast as you want to move as an HR pro.
Yeah, and you know, so I really like the 9-box. In fact, I'm one of those people that believes the world of work, frankly, the world in general, could be completely managed with a foursquare. And you know, it really is this idea that we kind of move along a continuum. The unfortunate thing is most, you know, in a perfect world, you'd have on your HR/people team a couple of different people in a couple of different boxes, right? Because you kind of need to like complement and there's value to being in each of those boxes, right? Depending on
there is.
But the problem is most organizations don't have that luxury, right? So they maybe they'll have one person or two people, and we expect them to be in all of those boxes.
Charlie, let me jump in and say, like, when I do that keynote, one of the things I tell HR leaders, if you're an HR leader with a shop of 2 to 3 people,
right.
maybe 4 people, right? When you hire the HR coordinator, you've got to make the active decision at that career level if you're going to get a transactional person that's going to be happy to be doing that.
Yep.
And what I call well-placed, or if you're going to go get somebody to the right of that 9-box grid that's never going to be happy doing transactions. You know, the clock's ticking for a year as soon as you hire that person, but they can help you do some of the higher end stuff. So
yep.
You're right. It's like forced choice everywhere.
Well, and so let me make the parallel here. Maybe not the parallel. Let me make the connection here to workplace culture. Because that is, after all,
of course,
to discuss, right? So I believe, and as you've all heard me say before, that it is foundational to much of what we do in the world of work. I think sometimes we think about culture as being in one square, like this is our culture, and really what we're discovering is that there is that 9-box. Frankly, in our world, it's maybe a 64 box, but right. but it's your culture is dynamic enough, it's nuanced enough that there are certain things going on in certain boxes. And forgive me, maybe this analogy isn't strong enough, but each of those boxes brings something a little bit different to the career experience, to what your people are compelled to do, to what is in fact driving the success of your business. And what we try to do is focus on all 64 of them, right? Or we try to look at it holistically and say, you know what, our box is strong. Our culture is good or bad. We do this a little bit with employee engagement. Like either our employees are engaged or they aren't. And that simply, I think it undermines the complexity of the workplace, number one, but it causes us to lose focus on maybe the one or two or three or four or five boxes that are really going to be more important for us. Again, right. You can say this about your HR team. You don't have to have all nine boxes filled up. What's the one or two that are going to be most important to you? Run with that a little bit. I don't know if that threw us off track.
Well,
or if
I think like from a culture perspective, so we do like, because we're a recruiting company at Kinetics, you know, one of the practices that I was pretty involved in launching is we have a recruitment marketing shop, right? Mm-hmm. So we run the career sites for a lot of our clients and do kind of content-based marketing from a careers perspective to help people kind of grow their employment brands. And, you know, one of the things we always run into is this link between employer value proposition and culture. Mm-hmm. And what I would tell you is if you believe there's similarities in those, and I'm going to go back to culture right now, what we always find in both those things is that leadership teams are very aspirational with what they feel like their culture is. And they think they should be able to define it rather than saying, no, culture is whatever the reality is,
right?
Like inside the walls. You can't control it. You can measure it with the help of someone like Charlie Judy. You can measure that culture and you can figure out where you want to go, but you can't aspirationally put your values on the wall and say, this is our culture. Because usually as soon as you put the values on the wall, I already know that it's aspirational in nature and it's not the reality. That's it in like 9 out of 10, like, you know, companies that I experience. And what I would tell you is I'm gonna like link it back to kind of this HR like pro and how HR pros at all levels get upstream. I would tell you like one of the factors is that it's one thing to say we're going to do an engagement survey. Okay. And I'm not going to say that that's right or wrong, but it is a little tired these days.
Yep.
So you're going to do an engagement survey and then linking it back to our intro conversations. You do the engagement survey, you knock it out, the results come back. And then the quiet moment is you see the results and you're left with the question, now what?
Right.
And you can run focus groups, which are good, right? To dig in, you can come up with a project plan of, you know, hopefully not too many things that you want to do to try and make things better. And that's really where the slog and all the gray area begins, because you're trying to move, you know, some of those cultural aspects from where they are today to where you want them to be with the help of someone like Charlie Judy. And it's a very, you're exposed a little bit as an HR leader.
Yep.
Because none of those things are automatic. It's like trying to herd cats related to the organization to get all that work done and to involve your leaders and things like that. It's just like, it's a very, very difficult thing.
Yeah. And I mean, thanks for saying all of that. And you know, I'll make a comment, which is not so bold given the world that I live in, but I think it's worth the audience, particularly those of you that are experiencing what Chris just described on a regular basis, this notion that I suspect that whether it's said or not, when your leaders say we need to do an employee engagement survey and you do the employee engagement survey and the number goes down, God forbid, whether it's said or not, there's this sense that maybe that's something that HR did or didn't do right.
Exactly.
And you feel the eyes on your back a little bit, right? And I'm here to tell you, that's misplaced. Second of all, it's non-productive, unproductive, and third, it's kind of a tail chasing exercise. It is not your fault, people, that you get these employee engagement survey results and then can't really do much with it. The number is important. The benchmark is interesting. But the problem is the data it provides, it's not giving you something that you can really act on in a intelligent, thoughtful, meaningful way. And that corners you. I would really encourage HR professionals who are looking to borrow Chris's term, to swim upstream, start looking for a tool that gives you better data. First and foremost, get some insights that you can nod your head to and go, yeah, like that makes sense. And now I understand what the heck's going on there. And now I think we can probably do something about it because I've got color, I've got context, I've got more than one number that I need to respond to, or you know, a series of numbers for that matter. Those tools exist. Of course, we believe WorkXO has one of them, but there are others. And stop doing the same old thing. Start looking for some different data. So Chris, I want to give you the last word. We're coming up on 25 minutes or so here. Any parting thoughts or observations or things you'd like to share?
Well, I think the parting thought is, since we're kind of on the engagement track and it fits what this podcast is all about from a cultural perspective, my parting shot, I'm gonna merge like kind of culture and where HR people want to go to swim upstream. My parting shot is that, let's say your scores go down. And, you know, one of the things I'm really passionate about is HR people not holding the bag, and it's a bag of doo-doo.
Yeah.
When turnover goes up or engagement scores go down. You know, it's like, I'm so interested in it that I've written about it. I'm doing a webinar, and this won't air by the time anybody can register, but you can pick it up. I'm actually doing a webinar on framing communications for HR people not to be the victim in their organizations. I would say it's really important for HR leaders at all levels to use tools like the one you provide, Charlie, that can give meaningful data, but then it's also just as important for them to be appropriately assertive within their organizations, to communicate early and often, to really show a sense that we're in this together. And by the way, guys, good or bad, I'm not owning these scores. These are reflective of us. I'll help you. But if you're trying to leave the bag of dog doo on my doorstep and light it on fire, you picked the wrong house.
Yeah, amen. And, you know, employee engagement scores are an outcome of so many things that happen from the moment any individual employee first encounters your brand and your organization to the moment that they're looking at it in the rearview mirror. And frankly, that's just too many moments. There are too many things going on there. Good information, worthy of being looked at from time to time, but get down to what's driving that outcome. Start looking at the behavioral side of things. And I'm betting, as Chris just said, that if you can focus less on that number and more about what you're going to do about it, and specifically how you can demonstrate that we're going to move the needle on this thing, we're actually going to put some effort into this, we're going to get intentional about it, we've got a plan for doing so, we've got some resources for helping us, and focusing less on that number and more about the things that are going to drive that impact, that's going to get you to a better place in that nine box
And you already gave me the chance to end, but I would add to that, Charlie. And by the way, I'm going to be involved in cutting out the cancer from our company.
Amen. Amen. Which is there. And hopefully, again, if you're getting better data, it's going to allow you to put your arms around that and highlight it in a way that it's not about you. It's about what the organization is really doing. So, Chris, I'm really thrilled to have you in my network, to be a friend, and to have had you as a mentor, even from times afar. I'm also really psyched to have you on WorkXO's advisory board. You add a lot of value, and obviously have helped us along the way. And just say a few words about how people on this or listening to this can hook up with you and follow you.
Yeah, so it's Chris Dunn, and I spell that K-R-I-S. Don't be fooled by the C-H's of the world. It's Chris with a K, Dunn. You can look me up on LinkedIn. You can look me up at Twitter, at Chris_Dunn. And, you know, you can find us at Kinetics, which is a recruiting company doing work nationally based out of Atlanta. Interesting folks there. We've got a vibe much like my blogs and just having a lot of fun. And it's great to be in your network as well, Charlie.
Awesome. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, download. You can find us on Podbean. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us in the Twitters. You can find us all over the place. WorkXO, WorkXO.com, at WorkXO. By the time you've heard this, you will have already eaten your turkey, and I congratulate you on doing so. Have a fantastic week ahead of you, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Culture Chat Podcast by WorkXO. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at WorkXO and on LinkedIn and Facebook at The Workplace Genome, our cloud-based culture management platform. To learn more, visit WorkXO.com.